Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
From their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway, the PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
The Around the NFL podcast is nothing but a salary dump.
Welcome to another edition of Around the NFL. My name is Dan Hansis. Come to you from a virtual room filled with some heroes. Mark Sessler, Greg Rosenthal. Heyo, summer tour. Going to call it a national tour, but that's international. You know, right now I'm in Texas. We're going to Texas. We're going to New Jersey. We're going to Japan. We're going to various two-star motels in the Hollywood area.
Not two-star, by the way. I operate in four-star territory. I can promise you that, with the salary dump being what it is.
Corrected. I stand corrected. How's everybody doing?
It's good. I am looking forward to heading off to Japan next week, but also, yeah, breaking ground as the first NFL media property to tape some podcasts in Japan in a few weeks.
This does remind me there are parallels here in terms of what it means to the 1920s when Babe Ruth and a collection of baseball all-stars went to Japan and introduced the sport to that country. That's where I put this. I think podcasting, which I'm going to work under the assumption hasn't made it to Japan yet. It's an island after all.
They're always behind on technology.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they're going to buy all in once they see Greg with a Yeti.
I mean, the NFL had an office in Japan right near where my wife Emeka grew up, but it closed down. So I guess we haven't made as many inroads as we would like. But if you're out there, if you're a listener from Japan, we love you.
But it's speaking of, you know, cutting edge technology, where you are, Dan, in Texas, will there be a follow-up article on California man returns to sleepy Texas town to podcast his show? I mean, there was an excellent article the first time around. Will there be a follow-up?
Well, not just an excellent article. It was a front page article in the Gatesville Messenger in Texas, right, touting NFL.com editor Dan Hansis. Broadcasting from the downtown area at a local lawyer's office. I think if I pursue another article, I think I can make it happen, honestly. But I think it's kind of a been there, done that situation for the old Zeuser. Now I have more important things. You know, obviously my role as the peacemaker is something that stands out to me. Now, Greg, a lot of people talking... And if you missed the Thursday recap of the NFL Talent Summit and the explosive conversation between Rosenthal and Rappaport, I feel like the feedback on social media was largely positive toward you, Greg. How has that event and that podcast changed you?
Well, when we walked out of there, all jokes aside, I really thought, like, oh, I'm really glad we did that. That was a unique thing that we've done in our timeline as a podcast. Like, we've been here long enough that we can get away with doing that and having a conversation with that like that I'm glad people heard. I don't know if it's changed me, though, as a human. I'm a brittle.
You think we got away with it, or is it still on some level, even though we found success in this business and the NFL, and we're very grateful for them, took care of us in our last contract. Like, do you think anyone actually heard it?
No, no. I mean, that is the key. I mean, by get away with it, I just mean, like, we're getting to do cool, interesting stuff, and no one's stopping us from doing it. But you're right. They're not stopping us from doing it.
By the way.
Because they're not aware. Because they're not aware.
If you're a shadowy league figure, and this isn't a challenge, this isn't me trying to, like, defy authority. If you actually are listening to the show, and you're high up in the company, and I mean, you have your own office on, I guess now would be the third floor in our new facility, just shoot me an email. You know how to find me and just be like, I'm listening. That's it. You don't even need to need anything in the body, just the subject. Now, does this end with Roger Goodell, a Brian McCarthy, someone of that level hitting me up? I don't know, but just let us know. I'm just curious. That's all.
The difference between you and me is you check email, apparently. I haven't looked at email in our company's email system in about three or four months. Not intentionally.
Well, when you're the Greg, I'm sorry. I'll have to strip you. You are no longer the bad boy of NFL media. It's now Mark Sessler.
He kind of always has had that deep within.
I need to know, Greg, though, because there was a lot of public raising up of your efforts, but often in many of the tweets that I saw, at the expense of Rappaport, to be fair, I don't know if you guys have communicated post feud. Non-feud ending, like what? I'm sure he was a little piqued to be continually critiqued at your benefit.
I doubt that. I mean, I haven't asked him about that. We did talk briefly.
I don't doubt
the
it.
Summit. Just because I don't think it really registered. I don't think he's too on top of it. I wouldn't think. I don't know. He wouldn't have come on if like that makes that big of a deal. He's been in that position, and we don't really know what that's exactly like. But he. He's had people kind of slamming him for various things he's done for a long time because it kind of comes with the territory. And I think most everyone I saw, I wasn't like locked in checking everything, but was pretty respectful and was like happy that we had the conversation, wasn't like tearing him apart. Or
I'll say this, and Mark, I know you certainly can relate to it because we kind of came up together in this business, that when you start, and if you're writing on a site and there's a comment section, you are definitely more sensitive to criticism earlier in your career, which is not to say now there's nothing someone could say online that won't get to you, because that could still happen. But you definitely you develop something more close to rhino skin. And if you're a Rappaport who has a platform that is vastly bigger than ours, even you have to, if you can't deal with the criticism, you're in the wrong business entirely. And I do give credit, whether you agree with where Ian came down in that conversation or not, coming on, he didn't have to do that. And that's why I kind of shot him a text afterwards, and I sent out a tweet to that point that he could have easily just laid low, or after that conversation ended, said, hey, I don't want some of that in there, and he didn't do any of that. So that was cool.
Right, and on that note, the first bylined article that I ever wrote for NFL.com way back when, before I had this, you know, thick skin against criticism that you mentioned, one of the first comments I ever received was, "You are dumb, and your children are dumb."
Yeah, don't bring the family.
I used to have to clear the comments at Pro Football Talk. For some reason, their method was you had to approve literally every comment, so it was like someone's turn, whoever was on the shift, of like mass approving 600 comments at a time. So you started to build up a tougher skin to them.
All right, today's show. Let's get to it. Let's spin forward. Mandatory mini camps. When's the last one done? When is the summer break for the NFL, if you want to call it that?
This is it. We're in it. We're in it.
Now.
It ended Thursday.
Every camp is now.
It ended
through.
The day that the summit ended. It was perfect.
Well, there you go. And so, with that said, we haven't, and that's because we've done the show long enough and followed the league long enough where. It's kind of, even if you do a show throughout the offseason, it's kind of a fool's journey to live and die by every update from OTAs. However, we still are an NFL football podcast, Mark, and this episode will be essentially a roundup of things that caught our eye during OTAs, during mandatory mini camps. We call them training camp altogether now.
Whisper.
Where's Gravedigger? You know.
Gravedigger.
I jumped on. Hey. Everybody should know this. Hey, what's up, buddy? I jumped on to do a sound check from Texas and just check in, chatted with Justin, a little clerical, off the books type stuff. And then, you know, a figure wanders in the background of the shot. He's from his apartment right now, it looks like, or his house. Who knows? His condo. And there she goes, like a ghost, a blonde ghost down the hallway and turns the corner. I never saw her face, but there she was again. There she was.
You guys all met her at the holiday party.
So isn't she brunette? Am I wrong about this? Is she blonde? I thought she was had brownish hair.
She is brunette, correct. She has brown hair, yeah.
I don't think I met her.
Who did you see then, Dan? Maybe you did see a ghost.
A lot of Dan's reporting and storytelling
over
the years.
Wait a second. By the way, I resent that, Greg. Don't come after the peacemaker after he blew that whole thing wide open last week. Wait a second. She's brunette?
She is
brunette. Yeah, I met her.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Are you sure I met her at the holiday party? Are you certain? I don't think
I Dan did. I don't think Dan
maybe
encountered
not.
Her.
Yeah, maybe not.
All right. Anyway, you're a lucky man. Let's get into it.
Thank you.
So much to hit here.
Yeah, I usually make fun of Mark for, like, you know, he prepares. I'm not making fun. I admire it, but he like, will be almost over-prepared sometime. This time, I'm taking Mark's corner. I'm over-prepared. I just counted. I have 31 potential whispers. We're not going to use them all, but I have 31.
Aye, aye, aye. Spicy. Let's see how many of the 32 teams we can hit, Graver. Hit us with a little ding every time we hit a new team, and then we'll see who got screwed. Newsflash will probably be about half of the teams in the southern divisions of the NFL, but let's see. Maybe we'll surprise ourselves. Greg, get us going with something that's a good way to kick things off.
Okay, I'm going to go with a basic one because it's a quarterback competition note that I thought mattered, and that was that Kenny Pickett didn't take a single first team rep throughout the OTA process.
Steelers.
And you can't draw too much from this, but the fact that Kenny Pickett was third in line, that it was Mason Rudolph taking all the backup reps, that it was Mitch Trubisky taking all the starter reps, and Pickett didn't even get in the mix. It's not out of the ordinary, especially for a coach like Mike Tomlin, to like work rookies in slowly. But I guess that's sort of my point, is that that's what Tomlin always does. And even though those reps will change undoubtedly in training camp and Pickett will get a chance to move up a little bit, it just emphasizes that I really think Mitch Trubisky is starting with a huge lead in this. And he's probably going to be the week one starter in the end. That's me. I don't think I'm overrating just to the OT.
This from Matt Canada, the offensive coordinator. We've been very clear that this is a real laid out plan of how we're going to evolve and find who our quarterback is going to be for the 2022 season. Man, this is one of the potential conversation points we were going to have when we were talking about today's show, is like, it matters. It doesn't matter. Like, this to me doesn't matter. I agree with you. But at the same time, I think Mark, Kenny Pickett, if he balls out in training camp and shows him a really strong handling of the playbook, and we're hearing signs that he's doing that already, he has a chance to outplay Mitch Trubisky. But
sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Mark Caboli from The Athletic, who is probably the best Steelers beat writer out there, said that the whole competition is essentially more show than substance. That lining up with what the zero snaps, lining up with what most writers who have covered practice have said. Well, why does he need to start week? Why would you need Kenny Pickett to start week one if you're the Steelers this season anyways? I think they went and got Mitch Trubisky to handle the early load. And like with so many of these, if and when Trubisky totally stumbles, then there'll be an extra month or two of preparation for Pickett to step in.
Can I give my answer to that? Like, why? Sure. Because the Steelers are trying to win the AFC North and Mitch Trubisky isn't good?
Yeah, but we don't even know if Kenny Pickett will be... Kenny Pickett is an unknown X-factor, too.
We know who Mitch Trubisky is, right? Or we think we know. And maybe things change in a different surroundings. But, like, Pickett represents that great unknown of maybe... Yeah, I don't know. Some of these quotes, and I saw Chase Claypool talking him up, and it's like, man, I got some, like, Mac Jones vibes off this guy a little bit. Mm. Like, maybe he ends up being somebody who could step in and immediately upgrade that position from where it was with Roethlisberger.
To your point, I think, look, if he showed up and he balls out in camp and Trubisky is struggling, then yeah, Pickett will wind up starting week one. He will have the chance to just be better. But I think it's fair to wonder whether at this point he will be better than Mitch Trubisky just because of experience.
All right, Mark, give us a whisper.
All right, I want to build on something that caught a little fire earlier in the offseason when Frank Reich said of Matt Ryan, "I knew he was good, but his accuracy is insane." There have been new proclamations floating in over this last minicamp scenario. I want to listen to some of these quotes that Zach Kiefer, our friend, recorded. This from Marcus Brady, offensive coordinator. "He's damn near a coach on the field." I mean, you're meant to be the coach. So you're essentially saying Matt Ryan could do my job. Gus Bradley said, the defensive coordinator, "You can feel him in this building." DeForest Buckner said, "He reminds me of Philip Rivers." And rookie wideout Alec Pierce said he could basically run this offense and this team by himself. And then Frank Reich came back around to say one more time, "Matt was unbelievable. Really A to Z. He did everything right. Just great leadership, great play. I mean, the whole way he took command. He's not starting to take command. He simply took command."
As we all know, he's excited to really go ahead and start to take command.
I want to cut that for social because Mark's look of intensity in his eyes.
Well, I had to look away. It was too much for me.
And I was, this is a lot.
This is a former MVP. This is a former first team All Pro. This is a 4-time Pro Bowler. This is the greatest quarterback in Falcons history. I would assume all those things that you just explained, that's how he would present on a new team. I think it's been a little bit on my radar with the Colts this offseason of how pleased they are with Matt Ryan, acting as if they have found, again, Matt Ryan of 6 years ago, which they haven't. So I think this portion of the football calendar, all the amazing things about Matt Ryan that are still in place are going to be shining very brightly. I would just say there just needs to be a maybe bring it down just a touch. Not you, Mark. You could be as intense as you want. Colts fans, in terms of expectations of what you're getting in 2022.
I am so with you, Dan, because my second note to this was that this lines up to me as a little bit suspicious. Because A, it's June, and of course Matt Ryan's going to play the part well. He's played this on the stage play for 10 plus years at this point. But something about it feels like there's a potential behind door number two semi-disaster if this doesn't go very well.
Well, I just worry about, you know, the weapons. Alec Pierce, you mentioned, who's kind of lining up as like the number two receiver right now. And he's a rookie that people thought would take some time to get going. They might bring back T.Y. Hilton. I do think, like, it's intangible, and I usually don't get too much into that, but I do think there is something about someone like Matt Ryan being in a new place when he's 37, getting away from a franchise that was not at its best right now with the Falcons or really over its tenure, and getting the juice flowing again, like Peyton Manning going to Denver or Brady going to Tampa, that it for such a great, an all-time great. I know he's not at that level of like all-time great, but he's excellent in what he does, getting that juice going again in Indianapolis with a good coach, with a better organization, and that you just might see a better Matt Ryan than we saw. That's all.
Where we were in February with the Colts to where they ended up, I think it's pretty close to a best case scenario for the mess that they had gotten themselves into. And I thought they made two smart moves, doing the move to say Carson Wentz is not the guy and getting out of that situation, and then ending up with Matt Ryan. So I don't take it as overly critical, Colts Nation. I think they did very well for themselves overall. And yeah, he could have, he's not going to throw for 55 touchdowns, you know, like Peyton, but he definitely will present, I think, an upgrade for them. How about let's head to the Raiders? Let's head to Las Vegas. Sin City, Mark. That's what they call it.
That is
not for us. When we went to Vegas, it was like basically don't even walk on the carpet in the casino area.
Ours was Worker Bee Central. Just go, you know, honor the company and then fly home.
It was Sinless City for us. But that's in the past now. The Athletic's Tashaun Reed reports that Davante Adams has, quote, almost exclusively lined up outside and has worked from the left and right sides of the field. Why does that matter? Because that's not what Adams did best or how he was used to great, historically productive measures with the Green Bay Packers. According to Sports Info Solutions charting, Adams drew 106 targets in the slot last year and only 70 out wide. Why is this happening? Two words. Greg's buddy, Hunter Renfrow, who is one of the steadier slot guys in the league. He's the new Wayne Krabet in the NFL. He's like a guy you just plug in.
No offense, but he's another level up from Wayne.
Hey, Hofstra.
The game has changed. Maybe if you put Wayne in, just saying.
Yeah, but you can't measure hot, bro. You can't measure hot.
Didn't Wayne Corbett send Dan a birthday message over?
That's true. Well, that was a very nice gesture by all.
It cost like $140 or something.
Do you expense that?
No, I did not, but an executive did.
Oh, very good. Anyway, so that's interesting. And I'm not saying that the Raiders made the wrong move by getting Devontae Adams. Brilliant to give Derek Carr one of the very best, if not the best wide receiver in the league. But notable that they will be using him differently, it seems, than the Packers did. And you would think in a typical situation, a team that gives up that much and then pays that much for a wide receiver, you're going to kind of want to use him in the way that's been proven to be most efficient. But the Raiders, really not by choice, based on roster build out, are going to be going down a different path, it seems.
Well, the money they gave Renfro, which we never had a chance to talk about, was really interesting. Two for $32 million for a slot receiver was kind of a new type of deal, but it was so short and guaranteed. Like, it made a lot of sense, I thought, for both sides. And he's just not someone that's going to play outside that often. And obviously, Darren Waller is not going to play outside that often either. I do think, though, this is an OTA, a bit of an OTA story, because Josh McDaniels is as creative as it gets. The way their roster is built, they can play a lot of big power football with two tight ends and fullbacks, and they're going to play somewhere they really spread you out. And I think they're going to have Adams as like the only wide receiver on the field. And I trust Josh McDaniels to be a little more versatile, and maybe just the way they want to work on some things of him on the outside at this time of year, but that he'll end up doing a lot.
And they've also talked about, you know, Josh Jacobs will not be bell cow material. I mean, he really was showing he shouldn't be anyways, but that they're going to run the ball with a lot of different sort of heavy sets.
That was one of my 31. I'm got to get rid of that one now.
You're going to have to
running back
that
by committee.
Do you think, though, that we all realize that Devontae Adams should be used in multiple ways, but it's not occurred to Josh McDaniels that at some point between now and when camp starts, it might pop into his head, I could be more versatile with this ultra-rich wide receiver?
I don't know, man. I've already seen Josh McDaniels head coach once, so I'm not giving the benefit of the doubt on anything.
It is an interesting topic, though, I think, when you think about their three best players. I think this is what OTA Whispers is all about. Just like getting your mind jogging a little bit, like, huh, that is an interesting.
Right, fantasy heads out there, don't freak out and now take Devontae Adams off your board. It's just notable. All right, Greg.
You could lower him.
I feel like we've gone for some big swings. I'm just going to go for one that's a little more random, but is interesting to me. That Jeff Okuda, the number 3 overall pick of the draft a few years ago, probably isn't a starter right now in Detroit, even though he's healthy. That Oruwariye is their default number 1 cornerback, and they're actually using Will Harris, who's played some safety before, probably as their number 2. They have a couple different guys in the slot, and Okuda's probably a backup on the outside. It's a coaching staff that did get to see Okuda relatively healthy, at least throughout the offseason before he got hurt early in the year. And maybe that changes, maybe it doesn't. But if you're thinking of like, man, how can the Lions really take a big leap up? Man, getting a lot out of their number 3 overall draft pick from 2 years ago would be nice. But it just doesn't seem like it's happening for him. And there were so many people, almost everyone, who just thought he was one of the best cornerback prospects since Darrell Revis. And it's interesting to me, and you hope for him it changes, but right now he's not in that spot.
What is more depressing than the scenario where a very highly drafted, highly touted player totally fails as a rookie, injuries, whatever it is, just does not produce, and then comes back for this second wave where all the talk is meant to be, now he's got it figured out, the game has slowed down, you know, the adversity of year one is past, where it's a shiny sun from here on out, but then the practices begin and he's still not even on the first team, and like the general manager's probably walking around depressed, the coaches have to tilt their statements to try to protect him. I don't like it.
Yeah, it's tough. And he's coming back off of an injury too, so that's been part of his story. But that they could use something out of him.
Whispers. Mark?
Well, I want to counter off the Matt Ryan one that I introduced before. Because let's talk about the quarterback.
Are you going to bring the same level of intensity as you did to
this is a little more just, it's more of, it's not a haiku because it's a quote, it's a comment, but it's shorter. And I just want you to ponder what has been said in Washington about Carson Wentz by QB coach Ken Zampezi, who appreciates Carson Wentz's curious nature, according to the headline NFL.com. He's intuitive, said Zampezi. He's curious. He's hungry for football. That's the part that's fun for me. Then he added, he's curious and in a good way.
As we all know, decided to really go ahead and start to take command.
And get curious.
Is that one of your nuggets, Greg?
No, but I definitely think that a man getting curious is going to like ring some bells for Mark. He's definitely going to be all over his story.
That will
like
be fine.
Never a day that goes by.
Mark, you're so crazy.
Yes, I get that, Frags. Never a day goes by, it seems, in the NFL now without the Washington Commanders in the news for something. The NFL fined Washington head coach Ron Rivera for conducting drills that violate the NFL's OTA policies. This also happened to Texans coach Lovie Smith and also Cowboys coach Mike McCarthy. And I got to say, like, I kind of like this move. If I was a head coach, I'd bring that kind of, I'm a coach who's, listen, you want to find me? Find me. But my boys play ball. So I'm going to mark that down, especially McCarthy, because I just think he's the lead dog
here.
Second
straight year.
Yeah, 2 years in a row.
That they right. got.
McCarthy's
but that's
just,
like, Lovie got fined $50,000. I mean, I know Lovie's made a lot of money in his life, but that's got to be, like, if you're Lovie Smith, or if you're just Lovie Smith, that's got to be pretty annoying to be like, wait, I just lost $50,000 on
I'm
this?
Not, I'm not feeling too bad for him. What, does he make it, $4 million?
I don't know. But, no, I...
What about Zaddy? He got fined $100,000.
Yeah, but he's Zaddy.
Okay.
Zaddy,
yeah.
Stop
I didn't,
it.
I didn't have that information, but yeah,
wait,
that's like...
That?
That's a lot.
Zaddy, stop it.
Well...
Oh boy.
He can't.
Dad,
he can't help
Dad
himself.
Was like, Graver.
Oh, Zaddy, you're so extra.
We're all in different places. I need you to be heavy on the sound drops today. Bring the energy, Graver.
Speaking of the Cowboys, Mike McCarthy believes Ezekiel Elliott is completely healthy now. Zeke suffered through a bad 2021 season, played through a torn PCL. McCarthy said he's had a tremendous offseason. Tony Pollard's in that room, obviously. Looked like a better running back last year. I'm curious where we stand with Zeke Elliott as we enter his age 27 season. He's only 27, but he certainly looked like a guy about 5 years older last season.
He's heard the talk. He knows contractually and just how everyone asks him questions about it that this is probably his last year in Dallas, unless he really turns around how effective he is. And he's just been someone that, to be real with it, seems like his like preparedness and everything that he does like goes up and down. And he's been down a couple years, and I think you could get more out of him by using him a little less. It wouldn't shock me if Zeke had one more good season in him, because when he started last year, I thought people were a little too hard on him, that actually he was doing some really positive things, but then the injuries caught up to him, which seemed to happen every year. Like, it wouldn't shock me if he has one more good year and that backfield is kind of the centerpiece of that offense.
There does seem to be like a continual drumbeat and emphasis to get Tony Pollard on the field too. He's been used in slot during these spring summer practices. So it's like, whether it's a committee backfield or him
That's
operating
a trope,
as a pass catcher.
Like one OTA trope we haven't mentioned too often is the, they're going to get both
Truth
running
left.
Backs on the field at
Truth
the same
left.
Time. And like the shiftier running backs taking a lot of snaps.
Well, they
in
did
the
do
slot.
It a little more last year, yeah. though. I mean, to be yeah. fair, I mean, I think yeah. Pollard looked better than Zeke at various stretches.
Okay. That was like a similar, well, it's just in terms of workload of the running backs, where it's just the messaging is all over the place. The Jaguars had said that, hey, James Robinson, when he gets back, he's our three down back. And it's like, well, what about Travis Etienne? If he's doing all three downs, what's Etienne doing? Just punt protector? Like, what's his role?
Well, that's another guy they're putting in the slot here in June. So maybe
right.
none of it has any meaning.
Like, we'll end up breaking all these teams down. But man, their receiver group is so thin that I think they're going to need more out of Pollard and Zeke. They got James Washington and their rookie. What now? I'm spacing on the name Tolbert as they're like 2 and 3, and neither of them practice throughout the OTA period. And it's just like. I mean, until Gallup gets back, I think you're going to need a lot. I'm going to go right into my whisper because it's Cowboys too, because I thought it was just relevant. And it's one I'm falling for is like the healthy Dak moving much better scenario. That's a whisper that like I think is meaningful because he's not coming off a major surgery. And it's worth remembering he did injure that ankle against the Patriots, you know, early last season. I don't think it was the biggest reason why he struggled. You know, he even said people gave me too much of an out after a while, like it had worn off, but he was so afraid to run. And like, he's not the same guy if he's not willing to take the 6-7 yards. And he gave you nothing as a runner outside the pocket or as like just a scrambler last year. And they need him to be a lot better. So I'm kind of feeling this offseason trip.
Mike McCarthy said he sees Dak Prescott running more this season. So yeah, if his body can handle it, it makes him obviously a much better quarterback. I buy into that whisper. Mark.
I want to go to Florham Park to Dan's Jets, where I find this story is one of the more intriguing, like we don't know what's going to happen here, scenarios around the league. And it's obviously Mekhi Becton, who spoke to the press. He described himself as being close to 100% and will be ready for training camp. And while he spoke to the press, he wore a self-created T-shirt with a circle slogan and the words inside of it, big bust. And the words around that said, fat, lazy, out of shape, injury prone. And basically what he said is he's used the critique that he's heard as motivation. And good for him if that's what he's doing. But then Connor Hughes of The Athletic, who is one of the better beat writers around, added this nugget that Jets offensive tackle Mekhi Becton showed up for minicamp. Both Saleh and offensive coordinator Mike LaFleur offered lukewarm endorsements of his physical shape, conditioning, and weight. So TBD on this scenario, because he's battling for the left tackle job. He'll get the right tackle if he doesn't beat out George Font, or maybe he gets nothing if he's weighs 675 pounds by the end of June.
You're reading this perfectly, Mark, because that was my takeaway as well. If you show up with the T-shirt, and the T-shirt also, by the way, had, I don't know if you had mentioned sucks and overweight. If you wear that T-shirt, I would imagine you're going to show up in that shirt in great shape after you spent the offseason trying to defy the haters. So a couple things stand out. He's wearing that shirt, but he's not physically in a great place. The fact that he said he's close to 100%. Remember, he suffered the knee injury in week one of last season. It was initially called a 4-6 week injury, and then he missed the entire season. And now we're in middle of June, and he's not all the way back yet. And yeah, to your point about Saleh, who's usually falling over with positive comments, like many coaches of his players, he said of Becton, he has 40 days to continue to work and get himself ready to play football, referring to the start of training camp. So listen, as a Jets fan who's been through too many wars, too many lost battles, I feel like this is heading in a certain direction. Hmm. The positive way to look at it is he is still super young. I think he's 23 or 24, tremendously talented, but you know, is the light going to go on? And it seems like his rope with the organization is running out. And if he does show up in camp in a bad place physically, I could see him ending up on the pup list, and there becoming some type of issue behind the scenes, and it gets ugly. I think there could be more to this story to come, and my concern is that it's not good.
The difference between him and some other high draft picks that go through this, you know, criticism with the media and everything like that is, like, we've seen Mekhi Becton play at a high level.
Right.
So he has to be pretty high on any list you came up with for like the biggest X factor, boomer busts, however you want to put it, because the Jets could either have a difference maker, maybe the best player on their offense, you know, if he was right.
That's his ceiling.
Right. Or nothing. And that's a pretty big difference, and it's very hard to guess which.
I mean, don't trust us. Don't trust the beat writers. Trust a guy like Brian Baldinger, who was falling over with effusive praise of Becton during his rookie season when he was on the field. But you haven't seen enough of it. So yeah, I think it's a major subplot. We'll talk about it a little later in a few weeks, maybe next week. When we break down the second-year quarterbacks and what their prospects look like. But so much is tied with Zach Wilson to how the line plays in front of him, and Becton's such a huge part of that. So,
One little note, though, because if let's say it veers positive, their offensive line, after years of ups and downs, looks fantastic, because you got Elijah Vera Tucker, you got Laken Tomlinson, and if Mekhi Becton becomes the player you want, I mean, they're going to be able to run that offense the way they hope to.
Yep. Let's stick with the offensive line. Whispers. Ravens head coach Did we get the Ravens yet? No, nailed it. Ravens head coach John Harbaugh says Ronnie Stanley and his surgically repaired ankle is, quote, looking great. Ronnie Stanley. Remember Ronnie Stanley? He signed a $100 million extension midway through the 2020 season. And then a couple days later, suffered just a brutal, catastrophic ankle injury, required two surgeries, landed him on the PUP list to start training camp last year. Then he appeared in one game in 2021 and then was ruled out the rest of the year. So we'll see. Harbaugh also said that Stanley might miss the beginning of training camp this season as well, but they're hoping he's going to be ready for 2022 season opener. Now, they added some guys in free agency, Morgan Moses, one of them, to help offset Stanley's loss if he's not able to do it, or and to give him some depth. But talk about a big piece. If Ronnie Stanley came back and was Ronnie Stanley, that's a huge boost for Lamar Jackson and that Baltimore offense that loves to run the rock.
Yeah, that's a great point, because especially drafting Linderbaum, which maybe they add a little more zone running to their offense, like their offensive line could be beastly again. And it's sort of a concern about the Ravens in general. Yes, they should have better injury luck this year after being decimated last year, but a lot of their season might come back down to like how quickly and how well these guys come back from their injury. I think there's some concern J.K. Dobbins and Gus Edwards might not be fully ready for the start of the season, ready to go. Tyus Bowser, who was like a key starter for them at a thin position, is coming off of a major injury. They drafted Ojabo, who won't be ready. So they have a lot of guys kind of like, are they going to be ready for the first month? They might be a better team to play in September than November. They usually are like that too.
All right, let's take a break. We'll be right back with more Whisper.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Calling all men. When was the last time you had a really good cry? A recent survey found that women cry on average 5 times a month, while men cry on average only once a month. Studies have shown that crying can support your mental, your physical, and your emotional health. I'm Radhi Devlukia, and on my podcast, A Really Good Cry, we push against typical societal norms. We embrace the real, the messy, and the beautiful, providing a space for raw, unfiltered conversations that celebrate vulnerability and allow you to tune in to share, connect, and find comfort together.
Our tears come as a way to let us release what we can't hold anymore.
I trust that no one's ever going to find out those deepest, darkest secrets. Yeah.
It's been a hard day. She walks out, and this is what she looks like.
Oh my gosh, give her an Oscar!
Listen to A Really Good Cry with me, Radhi Devlukia, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Greggy, we're back. Hit it, baby.
I just found it interesting that the beat guys really think Jimmy Garoppolo's gone. The guys who have been in San Francisco for like 15 years. I'm talking about your old beat writers. I'm not old, but like they've been around. Matt Maiocco and Matt Barrows.
Your trusty
these guys beat that
writers.
Like they don't just make their little 53-man roster projection without real inside information after talking to a lot of people, and they really think Jimmy G's gone. And I just reading through some of the coverage, it was more meaningful to me than anything that John Lynch or Kyle Shanahan said, that they tend to think that relationship is just over and they'll find a spot for him. So I tend to believe that too.
I thought Jimmy G's comments about how difficult last season was, and you know, he, for all the critique of his play, I mean, he never complained. In a scenario where it's like, you know, they're basically about to dump you to the corner at some point for the guy they just sold the franchise to draft, he never complained. He took him to the you know, plays away from the Super Bowl, and said it was one of the toughest years of his life. And so it's like, I think you have to work with Jimmy G at this point and not put him back in this situation. And also, let's look at the money, because they have to go deal with Deebo Samuel's contract. Like, Jimmy G is the chip that needs to be removed for that to be more possible.
It is a little concerning, though, to be one like snap away from Nate Sudfeld starting, you know, for you. It's got to be a little concerning.
Nick Wessling had texted us. We did our Dalton Scale episode last week, and he pointed out that he thought that Jimmy G was a guy that should really be considered as the prime meridian of NFL quarterbacks. And I said that I see him on that point, and perhaps we should have given Garoppolo a little more conversation toward that. I think that, yeah, I think the injury has made him so difficult to both evaluate, to trade, to even have a conversation like that. But yeah, I was doing a little research on the Dalton scale, because I was like, oh, that'll be a good, fun kind of off-season write-up. So I'm going to do something on the website connected to the conversation we had last week. And Jimmy Garoppolo's winning percentage is over 700 as a starter. And I'm not saying everyone knows that that's...
And the rest of the 49ers under Kyle Shanahan are under, well under 500.
Right.
And so that does speak to
And I can hear Chris, Nick's brother, from the great beyond shouting, like, it's not just about the quarterback wins and losses. But there's a reason why all you hear is all these players praising their teammate Jimmy Garoppolo, because the players only care about winning, and he wins when he plays typically.
Yeah, I think, listen, I mean, like, part of the Andy Dalton experience was, it isn't all about wins, but this was something Chris would bring up. I mean, he actually did in that 2019 episode, that Dalton will get you a certain way, but then you get into the playoffs and it's a crumble nation. And Garoppolo took the Niners to a Super Bowl. Secondly, here is my bigger reason why I went with Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins gives you a certain aura of frustration of like, ugh, like, he's good and you can argue for him, but he's still Kirk Cousins. Jimmy G is simply too, Kirk Cousins is a bowl of vanilla ice cream. Jimmy G is too attractive and too spicy as a person to be the Dalton scale winner. That's
now, what if you did this?
Me.
Interesting argument, but I like it.
What if you did this? Because again, I've been looking up some of these guys and diving a little deeper. What if you combine Jimmy Garoppolo's winning percentage with Kirk Cousins' 4 years in Minnesota, in which he's thrown 124 touchdowns against 36 interceptions and with a passer rating of 103.5? We would be talking about, he really is the next Tom Brady.
Yeah.
And yet,
there may not be a perfect Dalton right now. That's the issue. But the fans, the listeners spoke, and they were very solidly in the Kirk Cousins camp. So I don't know what we draw from that.
Well, we're drawing that Mark's going to take a W when he can, and he should.
We'll give it to him. You got it, Mark.
I mean, it's
That's a great point, Mark.
I think it's a W for the community, the listening community.
Right. Right. What was there? There was some other vote recently that I came out on top. It was the when we drafted those rosters.
With Phoebe?
Yeah, with Phoebe, yeah. I didn't bring it up really at all, but Mark's brought this up about six times now in two episodes.
Well, like you said, you'd have to you know, ascertain where you've scored a W and make sure people know about it. I wasn't on that other episode. I would have praised you had I been there. Trust me.
Well, I think the key is I'm 0-2 in this scenario. That's the key.
Go ahead, Mark.
I would like to go to...
Hey, Mark.
I don't like that.
How about some yes, Mjars?
I don't like that. So
that's a drop.
That's why you jumped in early
Great
to create
figure.
That nonsensical item.
Wow.
Okay, the power that I have at my house is to simply turn off this laptop and go watch a television show and not be part of this show anymore if I wish.
Okay. Well, I'll call you on that bluff. Let's see it. Let's see
I'm
that
just
happen.
Saying, if it gets to that point.
Go ahead, buddy.
Oh, yeah.
This has become utterly absurd. New Orleans, where there are a lot of whispers. Marcus Davenport, you know, this offseason is when
I'm glad you're hitting this one, dude.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
We're meant to be having, you know, times are meant to be lighter. It's the summer. We go out, especially if you're in New Orleans. You enjoy yourself in a way that most human beings cannot. Marcus Davenport has not had that offseason of wine and roses. He has had a nagging left pinky injury that dates back to his college days when he tore ligaments in his finger. He's had multiple surgeries on it. He had a plate put in it that broke. And ultimately, this offseason, they had to amputate the top of the finger. And, you know, he appeared before beat reporters with, you know, was heavily bandaged. And he basically said it's down to a nub at this point. He's also dealing with multiple surgeries to repair an injured shoulder. So this guy is going through it. And I think we think the Saints defense unanimously is a top three type entity. And he's a big part of that. And I hope he's healthy by then. I think, you know, for what he has to do, probably losing the tip of your finger, you can still operate, but you need those hands. You need those hands.
Yeah.
You need those hands.
You know, there's something gross. There's something gross about the little nug in there, that the plate that was inserted broke. That had to be nasty. And it always, if you are a football fan that goes back a little bit, you always think about when you hear something like this, Ronnie Lott. And you remember that story about Ronnie Lott, that he was playing in a game in December 1985, and he's trying to make a tackle on running back Timmy Newsom of the Cowboys. And he suffered a broken left pinky finger. The Niners finished 10-6 that season, qualified for the playoffs. They faced a powerhouse Giants team in the wild card round. And Lott was facing a decision from doctors, put a pin in the finger and a cast over it, and then wait 8 weeks for it to heal. So essentially your season's over. Or amputate the tip of the finger off from the first joint up and be able to play against the Giants. Lott, a great warrior, picked option B, gave up his pinky. Doctors numbed it, sliced it, put it in a cast. He plays in the game, and the Niners, even with Joe Montana, score 3 points. It's an awesome New York team. One of the great teams ever, the 1986
Bad job Giants. By Montana.
I think Montana got had the life taken out of this game, was removed at one point. He was hit. So if it's the game I'm remembering, Montana was devastated by a Giants defender and left almost lifeless on the floor.
Well, I don't know about the 86 game. I know that happened in the 89 or 90 game when he got hit, I believe, by Leonard Marshall and missed 2 years because of it. So maybe it happened twice, though. Because that was a ferocious Giants defense led by LT. But now the one thing that people don't talk about with Lott was that he looked back at it as one of the great regrets of his life. And Davenport's a totally different situation, but I just thought this was interesting. Mm. Here's a quote he told the Associated Press in 1986, because the story that everyone knows ends right there, right? Like Ronnie Lott.
I didn't know this. I didn't know
You
this.
Didn't know anything about the Lott? Yeah.
No, I knew that, but I didn't know he regretted it.
Yeah, that just like he was a total badass and this is who he was. It was so emblematic of what the man was. This is the quote he gave to the Associated Press the next year. I was trying to laugh it off. Oh, when he first, when the cast came off and he looked at what was left of his finger. He said, I was trying to laugh it off, but I felt sick. I tried to stand up, but I broke into a cold sweat. It was just a total shock. I thought, oh man, I should have had the pin put in. We are losing the compassionate side of sports. We're becoming gladiators. If I ever become a coach, I hope I never lose sight of the fact that players are people. They feel. They have emotions. I could have all of Eddie DeBartolo's corporations, who was running the Niners at the time, and it isn't going to buy me a new finger. It has given me a new perspective on life. How about that?
Wow. Fact check, by the way. In that game, the 1987 divisional playoffs after the 86 season, Montana was wiped out by Jim Burt and replaced by Jeff Kemp. So Montana can't be blamed for the loss. He had like a hospitalized concussion scenario.
Either way, that's a troubling story. And that's it was tough. I mean, Marcus Davenport didn't try to hide it in the moment how difficult this has been. Plus having the shoulder surgeries too. But it's like such an NFL story that's like, you know, it's like you almost have you. I saw the reaction to it. It's like, well, they'll be ready for the season. It's not going to like affect whether he's going to play or not. But as I would say, the preeminent Marcus Davenport fan among the national football media, I haven't enjoyed, you know, all the injuries he had. I've always pushed back. I've liked this guy. They make fun of him on the Saints Twitter podcast, calling him two firsts. He's had a nice career. He's a good pass rusher. They need him, and he's battled through these injuries to actually last year was a very good player for them.
Yeah, you should tell your friends on that podcast that he's not just some gladiator. He's a man.
Right. Respect this man's humanity.
He's flesh and bone, and he has emotions. Hey, let's tell a feel-good story. This one's for you, Greggy. you know, everybody had their little chuckles. Who's the guy? Who's the guy in our show? What was his name? Something Chuckles? Johnny Chuckles, was it?
Yeah, Johnny Chuckles.
I'm Johnny Chuckles. When the Patriots, quote unquote, reached for Cole Strange late in the first round, the guard. But, you know, I went through an ESPN roundup of how the first round picks have fared so far in their first mini camps. And I came across this nug from Mike Reese. You know, Graver, give me a little. Let's give Greggy this. He needs this. He pretends he's not a Patriots fan, but you know he wants this guy to really work out well. A plug-and-play starter at left guard, the UT Chattanooga alum, ended one practice at mandatory minicamp by hustling 30 yards to try to recover a fumble and ended up in a spirited mini-scrum with outside linebacker Matthew Judon and others as a result. Judon later credited Strange for his all-out approach, which has made a quick impression among several inside the Patriots organization. You can see that athleticism. You could see it match up with the vets who have been here in the NFL, which is really good. Matt Patricia.
Getting some Logan Mankins vibes. I mean, I don't know if you can't draw too much from OTAs. It is, I think, pretty difficult to evaluate guard play when you're doing 7-on-7 with no tackling or contact.
A little feel-good nug there, Greggy.
But that's good. I like the vibes. He's certainly going to start. There's no question. They don't have much of any option. So he is going to play. And you know Bill wants to prove everyone wrong. Logan Mankins, very similar vibes. Just saying.
You know who didn't show up with some Fakakta t-shirt? He arrived at training camp. Cole Strange. He showed up probably.
Wow, Dan taking Strange over Becton in a big surprise.
Oh, Jets fans shouldn't be a little annoyed with Mekhi Becton? Come on.
Okay.
No free passes here.
And that's Patriots play caller Matt Patricia, by the way. So
I'm sorry.
Oh, stop.
Assistant why do, coach. Why,
maybe we do something unprecedented and just give Cole Strange offensive rookie of the year now because it seems so cemented after that 30-yard burst into the pile.
Well, while we're there, there was some news from OTAs there that was pretty significant on their offensive line, which is you're playing Trent Brown at left tackle, who's missed chunks of basically every season, almost his entire career, and moving their first-round pick from 4 years ago over to right tackle to battle Isaiah Wynn, which would be a pretty big change. And I think Trent Brown is very different than Mekhi Becton, but I think he holds a similar importance to the Patriots season where you could either get all-pro type play or you could get very little, and moving him over to left tackle and potentially benching Wynn or maybe trading Wynn, I wouldn't totally be shocked by in camp is something to watch because Wynn's been okay when they've played, but their offensive line has been a strength for a while. I don't know if it's going to be a strength for sure this year. It's pretty up in the air.
All right. Good one.
I'm going to throw out another one just because that was
kind of like let's throw out a few more. Go ahead.
Attack on. Oh, I got it. I got too many. We got to bring up.
You established that earlier on in the show.
Gravedigger. I know, but we got some real good ones I want to get to. We got to bring up Gravedigger's guy, Treylon Burks. This is the type of OTA story awkward. That people are like, hey, it's only OTAs. OTAs don't matter at all. And I get that. But when he had the conditioning troubles at the first few practices, you're like, okay. Then when he's just like out of the last couple of weeks of practices and the coach is being very vague about it and they're not trying to put it on the asthma, they're kind of just putting on it like he wasn't really ready for this, a little concerning, especially considering the spot he holds on that roster as someone they kind of need this year. Graver,
three words for you, Justin, as we turn the mic over to you. Spin, baby, spin. Go ahead.
Well, on my Titans podcast that came out today, we did Good, the Bad, and the Ugly from Titans minicamp. And Treylon Burks was the
ugly.
I mean, yeah,
at
least use the name here. This is like Mickey Mouse stuff. You're not even saying the name, baby.
It's the Music City Audible podcast, hosted by myself and Justin Mello. Shout out. We said that was the ugly.
Film Room.
That's his Twitter handle.
That's my Twitter. We had a podcast a while ago where the co-host and I didn't work out.
You got to work on your branding.
Let me write this down so
too.
I can mentally process it. The name of your Titans podcast is Music City
Music
Audible.
Music City Audible. You know, like Music City Miracle, no, and then like an Audible is like a football thing.
Wade Phillips literally dying on a sideline.
Audio.
You're getting the audible. Word audio in there too. That is on next level play on sort of a Goodwill Hunting level play on words.
Right. just know that Mark is disgusted with this level of self-promotion, Graver, but you just need to soldier on.
Just keep
Thank
going.
Thank you. So Treylon Burks, we called it the ugly from minicamp that he hasn't practiced. And you could be like, oh, it's just OTAs. It doesn't matter. But the Titans need him to be a productive player early. And this is not an encouraging sign at all. So.
Here's the quote from Rob Moore. Ooh, former Jet Rob Moore. He was a good receiver. It's unfortunate. Some of the things he's dealing with are out of his control. The kid has asthma. Now, that's a quote where they're trying to, like, protect him a little bit. But again, it's like...
Vrabel did less of that, it felt like. Vrabel was a little more, like, hardcore coach, like, he needs to get his act together. But it was vague why he wasn't there.
He also, he really floundered in pre-draft workouts for teams. From a physical angle.
He had some
weight
issues at Arkansas where he kind of went up and down.
Right, and this is John Robinson, the GM, who totally whiffed on Isaiah Wilson in round one 2 years ago. It's like some of these GMs just hang around no matter what. And he's built a good roster, but I mean, they take risky players in round one.
One of the reasons
Caleb
I like
Farley a year ago has not given them anything coming off of huge injuries. He's a big X factor too, yeah.
One of the reasons why I love the draft and the shows we do at and around the draft is... You know, it's hope season. It's all about optimism. But now we're getting to, we're outside that window now when you spin forward and the draft, including those first 32 picks in the first round, are littered with guys that aren't going to make it. Now, that's not to say Treylon Burks is not going to make it. Once upon a time, Odell Beckham had a pretty messy first training camp with the Giants and turned into one of the more explosive playmakers we've seen in the last 30 years. Just, it's worth noting. It's fair. It's a good whisper. It's not even a whisper, though. I would imagine Titans fans are hearing it a little louder.
Yeah, no, they're not whispering about it at this point.
Yeah, we rated our concern level, and my level was, should I be concerned? It's like, start to ask yourself if you should be concerned about this. It's a little early to be concerned, but definitely
answering with
to
a
watch.
Question and a question, you know, classic deferral.
Classic deferral. All right, let's take one more break, and then we'll wrap things up. We'll be right back.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error. Get the Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Calling all men. When was the last time you had a really good cry? A recent survey found that women cry on average 5 times a month, while men cry on average only once a month. Studies have shown that crying can support your mental, your physical, and your emotional health. I'm Radhi Devlukia, and on my podcast, A Really Good Cry, we push against typical societal norms. We embrace the real, the messy, and the beautiful, providing a space for raw, unfiltered conversations that celebrate vulnerability and allow you to tune in, to share, connect, and find comfort together.
Our tears come as a way to let us release what we can't hold anymore.
I trust that no one's ever going to find out those deepest, darkest secrets.
Yep. It's been a hard day. She walks out, and this is what she looks like.
Oh my gosh, give her an Oscar!
Listen to A Really Good Cry with me, Radhi Devlukia, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, let me check in here. I mentioned that I kind of spun through some of the rookies. Anybody, not so much, obviously a lot of the first round picks are going to a lot of positive talk around them. But, Burks as an example, as a guy where maybe not so positive around him. I didn't see too much of that elsewhere. One guy to keep an eye on, let's talk about the Giants real quick here, Evan Neal. I do put something into when a rookie shows up and then people are kind of falling over with praise, and it makes you think, oh, I wonder if they nailed this pick. Evan Neal, the offensive tackle, taken 7th overall. Veteran guard Mark Lewinsky described him as just dominant, and that's a good sign. That's the type of stuff you heard around Quentin Nelson when he first came to camp. I'm just saying, when you hear words like that, immediately I'm into that. And our friend Kayvon Thibodeau of the Giants, just to keep an eye on it, he spent most of the spring in a red jersey working out with a trainer on the side because of an undisclosed injury he got twisted up on in a rep late in practice during the second week of OTAs, and they kept him out of the spring. Not a reason to get overly concerned. We'll see. As long as he's on the field for the start of training camp, it's probably nothing, and they're going to be careful with the number 5 overall pick. And I'll also mention, unless this has changed, Gravedigger, that Kayvon Thibodeau will be on our podcast for a 3rd appearance next week. And that's something to look forward to. That was part whisper, part plug.
Smart. And that Evan Neal pop is kind of in contrast to the tackle taken right after him, Ikem Ekwonu, who isn't getting any negative talk, but Brady Christensen's been lining up at left tackle there, and Ekwonu didn't seem like totally happy with the suggestion that there's a chance he could play guard. So, and the coach kind of putting it out there that Christensen is maybe one of our best players. Just something to keep an eye on, that Ekwonu maybe not stepping in the same way.
All right, Greg, what else you got? Hit us with the certain quarterback conversation.
Well, I noted that Jacoby Brissett hadn't taken any first-team reps at all, almost any, not just first-team, but just any reps. That had been all Deshaun Watson at the OTAs in minicamp. And I think putting that into context with the reporting, and there's been a lot since we last talked, his side, Watson's side, is bracing for a potential 1-year suspension. That was in the Washington Post. We don't know if that's going to happen or not. And then also the news that 20 of the 24 women who were suing Watson in civil court are now settling their suits, and that more of them, it sounds like, are going to settle as well. And it really just may be the original claimant that went against him that is going to keep her case going, Ashley Solitz. And so there's a lot going on there, and I don't think the fact that Brissett didn't take any reps, by the way, is surprising, because I think OTAs and minicamp is when you would want Watson, just as a team, to get as much work in as he can. And at some point, though, if we know the suspension, and it's coming, we just don't know how long it is, in that point we'll be in training camp, you're going to have to get Jacoby Brissett ready to start the season, because he's going to be starting a chunk of the season, and that's going to be one of the many awkward things to do with the Browns that they'll have to do in training camp.
Well, also from another angle, if let's say Watson's gone for a year, which is my personal expectation, the Browns season is just wait until next year anyways. I mean, I understand they're still going to probably, they're a talented roster to some degree, but if Jacoby Brissett's your quarterback, like, the plan couldn't be farther afield from what they hoped would be. And there is another note that Albert Breer, while we were gone, reported that the Browns are now willing to pay up to half of Baker Mayfield's salary in a trade. So there's been this little tiny drumbeat that, you never know, Baker Mayfield could be back with Cleveland. I just think that relationship,
no way,
from both no sides, way, is exactly, no way, like, it's just not happening. So I think if you don't have Deshaun Watson, if you're Cleveland, you understand this is a lost campaign, no matter how they message it, and you think about next season.
Yeah, I saw that from Breer also, and the Panthers would only do a Mayfield trade if it's a bargain, according to Breer, and maybe that means the Browns would have to eat more of that money. Josina Anderson of CBS Sports also reported that the Panthers are, quote, still doing its due diligence in terms of looking into QB Baker Mayfield, the football player and the person. So, you know, Baker, I wonder, you know, not, we don't need to delve too far, because we've tried to shoot the story into the sun many times this offseason, but I wonder if he learned anything in terms of how to handle the media and what to say, and more importantly, what not to say, because maybe that is playing a role in him being kind of hung up here in between two worlds in this type of upside down purgatory he currently exists in.
I do think that the settling the civil cases is pretty significant too. I think it might have been a case of what's happened over the last month and the the negative attention that's rightfully been on Watson from the HBO story and the new cases, that at some point they just decided this needs to end to move on. And it won't totally end because there'll be that one case apparently going against them. But I think it makes a lot of sense that they're trying to move on after forever saying that that would never happen, that they would never settle.
I saw a report that there could be two more coming, civil suits, which would take it up to 26. And I'm just curious, because there had been talk that the NFL might now wait to make an official move, you know, as we're saying, until all the lawsuits were settled, either through the courts or as a pretrial settlement. I'm just curious, like, what, just because these 24 get settled potentially, you don't know if the trickle will continue, right? It could keep coming. Who knows?
Well, that's why they talked. There were differing opinions inside, like, the league office reportedly on what to do with this. But I think if you say as a baseline, maybe you're out for the year, then if there's more trickling in cases, I think a year at least from now says we've viewed this a certain way. Here's the punishment, and it's not 6 games or 8 games where you're thinking, oh, it should have been 10 or 12.
Right, and I'm not assuming it's going to be a year either. There's a thought that, like, they put that out there so that when it's 10, then they can act like it's a victory, that they're the ones leaking this. And there is going to be this one case, Ashley Solis, who I think her words, it shouldn't take that, but her being on HBO and her, people seeing her just say that what happened to her, I think had a big impact, because I think people believe her, and she's not going to settle. It sounds like she wants to take this. She doesn't want his money. She wants to take this as far as she can.
Whispers. Mark, what do you got?
Arizona, the Cardinals.
Sorry, Mark. This, again, not personal. I don't even know what this is. Who's got it?
Sorry, Mark. Rob Gronkowski has announced that he is retiring again.
Oh, wow.
Ouch.
Wait, what? Really?
Yep. 11 seasons, and now he will retire.
Look at Graver stepping in. Doesn't even let us know.
Pretty good.
Did it with something that's worth it. That is a surprise. I just expected that somehow Tom Brady has this magical power that will keep Rob Gronkowski playing with him as long as Tom Brady wants to play football, but I guess not.
I'm still not ruling out that he'll play at some point this season.
Same.
But at the same time, I totally agree. In fact, I've joked about it on the show. Like, anyone else that's getting caught up in the will he or won't he isn't paying attention, because Gronk is just sitting out. He doesn't want to do training camp. He doesn't want to do OTAs. But maybe he's just having too much fun again. You know,
doesn't it make sense if with this situation, if he unretires, it comes back in November, fully healthy, they roll with him from there? He knows the offense. He is a spiritual link with Tom Brady. You don't need him in July and August.
Right. He's probably like, I don't want to do OTAs. And then he was like, I don't want to do mandatory minicamp. And now he's like, I don't want to do training camp. And then he's probably like, I don't want to do September. It's super hot in Tampa. So, yeah, he'll come in right around Halloween. He'll like roll in and probably be a key factor by January.
It's hard. Football's hard. And he's had these back surgeries that people thought were going to be a problem for him his whole life. And the Bucs put him to work. One of the sneaky parts of Gronk's value the last couple of years is literally no tight end plays more than Gronkowski. When he is playing, he is on the field. And that's a lot to ask. So I agree with you, Dan. Like, if you're Gronk, if you're going to play me 60, 70 snaps a game, maybe I'll wait till like week 12 or even see. Maybe I won't play then, but I'll find out how I'm feeling then.
Where
that would
you,
be the way.
By the way,
to do
where
it.
Do you get off, Greg, saying football's hard? You never played the game.
It just looks very hard, and they all say it's hard, and I believe them, frankly.
Is that a fair point, though, Mark, for me?
Yeah, I mean, I can like channel. I remember going to practice 5 days a week, 2 hours a night, 6 to 8 p.m.
I play on the beach with my son, and even that's difficult.
You're playing a small child, Greg.
I mean, it's hot.
Right, just like I wouldn't. Nobody wants to hear about me what it would be like growing up in England. Mark could tell you.
I'm drawing from human experience.
Exactly. All right, Mark, without further ado.
It's a big loss for them. It's a big loss.
I mean, I will offer a nugget. Are there any semi-snarky sound drops or maybe a news update from like Chinese negotiations before I get three words in?
There is one more thing, and I'm sorry. With Gronk temporarily or permanently out of the picture, and we know that O.J. Howard, who, by the way, was not getting very good reports up there in Buffalo that he's not moving well.
He's a backup too.
Which is interesting because, well, he had a bad, I think, an Achilles injury, but he was the can't miss. He was Kyle Pitts a few years back. Again, it shows you injuries and guys can't miss, sometimes miss. But anyway, who is going to eat up and gobble up those snaps at tight end for Tom Brady?
Cameron Brate's their starter. They did draft a guy in the fourth round who I don't know much about, Otten, Kate Otten.
Oh, that's right.
And they'll play more receivers. They'll go four wide and three. You know, they'll give Russell Gage some of those snaps too, and some of the receiver depth. But yeah, they don't really have a guy like Gronk. Cameron Brate is certainly not a Gronk like figure.
No one has a guy like Gronk now.
I submit that even
a blocker, they'll probably find someone out there like a veteran who isn't signed.
I submit you sign Will Fuller. And then have him eat a bunch of food and convert him to tight end. Will Fuller to an active roster in 2022. Let's make it happen. All right. Without further ado, Mark Sessler, the floor is yours.
Mark, I'm very suspicious. Mark.
I am tracking, like, you know, this Kyler Murray situation, and every little thing that's said to me matters, because I think the whole organizational shift from where we were. Back in, you know, February, March, where Kyler Murray was botching this salary negotiation trade through social media with his agent and all that stuff. And there were reports that he's like a video game addict that doesn't really care about football as much as other things. Well, now you've got Cliff Kingsbury saying at the wrap of minicamp that he is praying that Kyler Murray gets a contract extension before camp, so he's there on day one. Steve Keim in May said, we feel confident this can get done. I just think there's been a tone shift where if this was going to turn into some horrible drama, it feels like at least, maybe the negotiations take a while, but everyone's on the same page, and it's not let's get rid of Kyler Murray, or he's not a leader, he's not this or that. They're looking around and saying, we can't get anything better right now. He fits this system. Pay him.
Good. They should.
Whispers.
All right, I'm out. I mean, I have a couple others, but we don't need to talk about Elgin Jenkins right now. So what else, Greg? Why don't you empty out and some type of?
Oh my gosh, we'll just do a rapid fire one. Let's go. Hit me. Braxton Jones is right now the starting left tackle in Chicago. He was a fifth round rookie pick. Right now, Tevin Jenkins, who they drafted very high a year ago, is a backup. Shane Steichen. Colin plays. I think that's kind of been under the radar a little bit in Philadelphia. He picked up halfway through last year. Randy Gregory, he's always hurt coming off a shoulder surgery. Devin Bush, I thought this one was fascinating. I think he's getting replaced by Miles Jack. They're moving him to like strong side linebacker. I don't know if he has a role. Rodney Hudson didn't show up. Watch out for a contract problem. Jarvis Landry, finally healthy.
Let's get team names in here. Some of us can't hit every one of these players in their database internally.
Sure. Devin Bush, that was in Pittsburgh. It's kind of been a bit of a problem. Maybe getting just full out replaced by Miles Jack. Ernest Jones and Bobby Wagner, kind of a fun little duo there. That was just like a hype piece that I'm into. Derwin James coming off a shoulder surgery. Jesse Bates, he's not gotten that contract from Cincinnati. Dax Hill, the first round pick, taking all his snaps. Brian Flores is going to be an underrated add to this Pittsburgh Steelers operation. We already did them. And that's not a ding. We've done a million Steelers things.
What's your whisper?
Well, this is one where you need more time to do it. It's kind of more like Brian Flores is having a big impact, and it's maybe going to have a sneaky monster impact on that team.
Mark, I feel like we should just, the idea is to just let Greg go until he delivers one that's a little like, what? And then we have to shut him down. But then he's... Right. He might have something trenchant coming up. It's like, where do you draw the line here?
We have to stay for it.
I probably can just stop. Sam Williams, edge pass rusher, Dallas, buying that hype. MVS pop in Kansas City. Tim Kelly taking over in Tennessee, passing game coordinator. I think there could be some drama behind the scenes of their coordinator getting fired during the season. That could be something to watch out for.
Whisper.
And then finally, I got a few more, but I'll just stop. Jamin Davis in Washington, there's a trope. He's not lost anymore, which is not always what you want to really hear from your coach.
It's not what you want.
Yeah, you were lost.
The only thing about that one story is that the players that are commenting on how we played last year had some pretty pointed notes about how he was such a muddled mess on the field. Like, normally you'd be like, oh yeah, he was a rookie, he's having a tough time. But if you go read what some of them were saying, it was like, ouch, he was not a popular player in terms of his production.
Yeah, and he still might be in trouble, I think.
I have one more real quick one. I just realized it because it really caught me by surprise. Mercedes Lewis, Packers tight end, is heading into his 17th NFL season, and he's just one season away from tying Tony Gonzalez and Jason Witten to the greatest ever play of the position for 18 years in the league. Mercedes Lewis has been around since, you know, what, Greg, since you were a teenager almost? That's no, not close. Mid-20s?
Yeah, early 20s.
That's what's wild. That's kid stays in the picture.
They maybe the Bucks should trade for him. I remember writing him up in Roto World magazines when he was a rookie. So that is how long I've been in the game. You thought he might have been a little bit more of a receiver, a big impact. He was kind of a disappointment from a fantasy perspective.
He's entering his 17th year. Guys get cut all the time when they're 28. Oh, he can't play anymore. Oh, Zeke Elliott, man, he's going to get cut this year. He can't move anymore. 27 years old.
A special human being.
Anyway, shout out Mercedes Lewis. That's an achievement.
He also spells Mercedes in a way that I continually misspelled.
Don't call him Mercedes.
No, you
Don't
can't
do it. All right, good stuff. Did you have anything, Mark? I know you felt a little overlooked in the back end of the seg.
No, it's more that every time I attempt to speak on the show, Dan is unfurling some new sort of mean-spirited sound drop that tries to knock me down a peg.
Don't peg me.
Or there's some other anthem or breaking news. So it's like, I'm not sure why I prepared for the episode to begin with.
You know that we've been doing this long enough. I'm not unfurling these drops.
You're creating them ahead of time. That's how you saw Gravedigger's woman interest in the background.
You think that I met up with Gravedigger before today's show to plot out how to undermine you?
I think you're texting him or doing little DMing during the show. Yes, absolutely. There's some coordination.
Justin, can you
or Justin has simply adopted the Erica playbook. He's read the Erica playbook.
Internal conversation about how to take down Mark and make him unhappy today between you and I.
No, absolutely not. This is
what is awful. What is Gravedigger going to say to that question? What
right,
is
there's
his
just been
gonna
a general
be?
Coaching up.
No,
of the
no, absolutely
over...
not.
Just trying to make a
not.
Great product. You know, a little conflict is better for entertainment value.
I'll show you conflict.
What was that Graver impression there, Mark?
No, absolutely not, Dan.
I do have to say I'm very into the
spot on
Graver Sessler heat that continues to simmer on the back of the
it's funny because you advertise yourself as a peacemaker, but really you're a stinky
right
Vegas.
You're the opposite. I would say that Graver and I, you know, before our show up in WeHo, had it sat down and talked for about 25 minutes, had a great chat. So there's some nonsense involved with that take too.
I've had nothing to do with any tensions that might be building, but once again, with
nothing
Mark and
at all.
Our producers, I have had nothing to do with it. This has all been naturally homegrown, but I am enjoying it. I'll say that, but I'm not responsible.
Dan looked at me like a proud father when I hit the Mark Whispers drop earlier. So
oh, that's
that was
true.
Nice.
That's true.
I'll be a different type of relative to you.
We miss the Vikings, the Dolphins, the Bills, and the Falcons, unless one of the ones Greg said covered.
No, we got
those
the
teams.
Bills because O.J. Howard, he's struggling
oh.
up there.
Oh, Arthur Smith
Dawson
has been
Knox.
Glowing about Desmond Ridder being like way beyond a rookie, but it felt very tropish to me, so I didn't go
right,
there.
So who's still out now if we count those two?
Dolphins.
Vikings, Dolphins.
Brian Flores, kind of Dolphins adjacent.
We'll yeah, I guess we hit Kirk go. Cousins on the Dalton scale stuff too.
There you go. So. Got him.
Not really, boom. Not a...
That's fine. Everyone's talking about, oh, now the Vikings have an updated offense. It's like, damn, like they scored like 30 points a game last year.
I got one note, which was like, it was either left guard or right guard. I forget which one was like the only starting position that was kind of up for grabs for the Vikings right now. And it's like, damn, is this team like coming off of a Super Bowl championship? It is this weird team that they have like incredible continuity. And so there's very little to talk about, but only like one starting job maybe is like totally up for grabs, which
I mean,
is
counterpoint
like,
or a lack of desire to improve. They're like, we're good with what we had last year. Just start them
right.
again.
It's a little weird.
All right. Good stuff. We will be back on Thursday with another episode of Around the NFL, the summer tour.
How's
barnstorming.
Texas?
When are you going to Japan, Greg?
Monday.
To the Orient, Greg goes.
I will miss the Kayvon Thibodeau in-person interview, which is unfortunate because I enjoyed them quite a bit.
That is a bummer. That is a bummer. But we'll say hi. We'll say, Greg says hi from Japan. Maybe he'll say, wow, like that's intriguing. Like he's in Japan.
Good conversation starter.
Like the cut of his jib. Yeah. Yeah. That old vibe. All right, good. All right, thanks everybody for listening. until Thursday, you know what you need to do. Heed the call.
Hey, Danny, Wayne Corbett from New York Jets. Got a message from Ricky Hollywood. Wanted to reach out to you. Tell me you're a big Jet fan and a fan of mine. Appreciate it, man. You know, I had a blast in my 11 years. Hopefully gave you a lot to cheer about. A big reason I am reaching out to you, I heard you're having your birthday. So very happy birthday to you, Dan. Just want to let you know everybody's thinking about you. Love you. You know, hopefully you have a great day, safe day. Wanted me to tell you that you have the best hair out of anyone I've ever seen, but I'm concerned they want people to call you the new old Blue Eyes. Not sure what that means, man, but sounds like you got some great friends there rising you a little bit. Listen, I know it was a tough year, 2 wins. You know, there's nothing you can do about it now, but they got a great new coach, coaching staff. We got the second pick in the draft, man. We're getting a quarterback. Not sure which one, but the young guys did well. You know, Becton and, should have made the Pro Bowl. Quinn should have made the Pro Bowl. So there's a lot to be excited about. So look forward to that in 2021. Hopefully you have a great 2021. And I wanted to give a shout out to your Jet dad. Heard he's the real Jets Aww. Fan. So enjoy your day. Happy birthday, Dan. And go Jets. Take care, man. 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 Take care, man.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Calling all men. When was the last time you had a really good cry? A recent survey found that women cry on average 5 times a month, while men cry on average only once a month. Studies have shown that crying can support your mental, your physical, and your emotional health. I'm Radhi Devlukia, and on my podcast, A Really Good Cry, we embrace the real, the messy, and the beautiful. Listen to A Really Good Cry on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.